Hello and welcome back to Palestine Deep Dive. Today I'm thrilled to be joined by two amazing guests, Francesca Albanese and Eyal Wiseman. So let's just start by you, Eyal, giving us a glimpse of what's actually happening in Gaza. What is the evidence just suggesting? What's happening in Gaza right now?
It is bad and getting worse, and we cannot even imagine that things could get worse, but the explicit annihilation policy of Israel is manifesting itself now, mainly in the north of the Gaza Strip. The entire urban infrastructure, we are architects, so we look at buildings, we look at roads. The entire urban infrastructure of Gaza has been destroyed. All institutions that organized society are being targeted intentionally. Not only that they were targeted intentionally, they were targeted when, at the time, we were looking at the time of targeting of building, at the time that they would be expected to be fully occupied. Buildings at nights and social spaces, places, markets during the day where people were there. I'm talking about the beginning of the genocide. All the roads are ungrounded. I mean, we have never seen, and we've been working for decades on documenting urban destruction. We've never seen that level of destruction that is not only building rubble, is that the environment completely is ungrounded. We are back to the bare soil that is under the cities. Bulldozers stabbing the front loader a foot into the earth and driving forward, basically plowing every piece of territory, returning the Gaza Strip into a kind of its pre-inhabited state, as if whatever is built there are specks of dust that could be just swiped away with a gesture of an arm. All agricultural area destroyed. All hospitals have been targeted. Some are barely functioning on a very partial level. All the population, or most of the population, is being concentrated on the dunes in the south west of the strip, in area that is effectively barren, was underdeveloped also before the genocide has begun.
Having listened to Eyal, how do you describe this, what's happening in Gaza according to the international law?
You see why for me it's so important to make sure that those who listen to us have a vivid picture of what has happened, because this is not normal. This is, people still keep on referring to what's happening in Gaza as a war. It's not a war. It's full destruction of life, of anything that stands on the ground and actually beyond the ground in Gaza, and of course the human beings who have inhabited it. This is why it took me a while, frankly, after this assault started. But I can't forget that those I interviewed in the early weeks, the Palestinians were surviving the assault, were saying, this is like no other war we have had, and these are people who had gone through five major wars and 35 years of military rule before the disengagement. So it's genocide. Genocide is the destruction of a group in whole or in part as such, and it can happen through acts of killing, severe infliction of mental or physical harm, or creations of conditions of life that would lead to the destruction of the group. And how the destruction of mosques, universities, homes, roads, anything that is necessary to live, to survive, the destruction of hospitals, the health system has been decimated. And again, as yesterday I was with Dr. Rassan Abusita, who said something that touched me. He said, I've been in many wars, and war crimes are those that tend to destroy the present and the future, but genocide also destroys the past. Mm. So you can, whatever it carries forward can never prove, remember what the people were and are.
What is the point of saying that this is a genocide or not a genocide and argue it is a genocide or not?
It is not only about naming and calling for end of the genocide, but genocide, by saying genocide, you say end the genocide. You don't need to say end the genocide. Calling something genocide, you say it is synonymous with saying stop. But it's not only that. A genocide is a call for reparation. And a genocide, more importantly, it is a way of historically understanding the root causes of destruction. So the fact that a genocide is escalated now allows us to see clearer into the past and to see that the Zionist settler colonial project intent and modes of production, of its destruction, dispossession, erasure of Palestinian social, political, national, cultural life has been there from the start. It allows us to see clearer at what happened during the Al-Nakba. It allows us to see clearer what happened during the siege of Gaza in the past two decades and, you know, historical patterns. And I think that the way to, the interesting thing about, for me, about calling something a genocide is about, you don't really look only at the consequence. You don't only look at what's happening on the ground. Of course, forensic architecture, what we document physical transformation on the ground. But it's about intent. And in order to unpack intent, you need to look at ideological structure. And you need to look at the cultural production of Zionism, the way it imagined itself, the dehumanization of Palestinians, and, in fact, the desire to completely annihilate them from the land. So the intent part demands us to look at history, at the long history. And the genocide is not only about stopping it, it's about delegitimizing the ideology that stands behind it.
According to your study, 800 pages of report, did you notice that there is a specific place or area in Gaza that is safe, 100% safe for the population in Gaza? Any place, any building, any area?
No, we say it very clearly in the report and we show it. There is no safe space in Gaza. There's no safe routes that are provided for people when they receive those murderous evacuation orders. And there is no humanitarian zone. These are euphemisms that are meant for consumption here in the Western media or Global North media, however you want to call it. There is no space. All the genocide operate through the production of different types of zones. It has always operated in that way. Zones where you displace from, you create zones where conditions of life are impossible. And this is where we see now north of Wadi Gaza or north of the Netzarim corridor. And concentration areas. Every genocide, and this I completely agree with Francesca, we need to look at the mechanism of settler colonial genocide. A genocide operates by different speeds. There is fast destruction, there is slow destruction. There is annihilation, and there is the creating and condition of slow death and destruction.
Is it possible that Israel has succeeded in rendering Gaza completely destroyed right now? Because we know, even in 2019 or 18, the UN said that Gaza by 2020 will be unlivable. What about now?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, just look at the agriculture, no? The kind of the analogy from the Guatemalan genocide. The destruction, the agriculture area, rich agricultural area in Gaza is on the east. This is where the fertile soil exists. This is what is being destroyed. And it's not only being destroyed, the current crops, the seasonal crops, the buildings that are being pulverized are making the soil toxic. The pumping of water into whatever tunnel shaft they have found is making the deep soil. So effectively, this is destroying not only you were saying that, you know, this genocide has taken, even from the survivors, a number of years of the life expectancy. We're talking about generations into the future. And this is rendering that area kind of uninhabitable to a certain extent. So this is actually what we're seeing. And it aligns with the mechanism of colonial genocide.
Thank you. Francesca, let me get back to you. You have been doing a lot of tours recently in the US, in Canada, in the UK. But what shocked me, is that when you were in the US, the US ambassador for the UN, Linda Thomas Greenfield, said that you are unfit for your role and the UN should not tolerate anti-Semitism. What do you make of these comments? And are you surprised that the US ambassador is saying this about you?
No. I mean, we are talking of a government which is complicit with the crimes that Israel is committing. This is what is left to them, defaming people like me and like many others. I think you would fit the category of the self-hating Jew.
Straightforward and
so
semi.
It's okay. Again, as I've said other times, I don't want to entertain any discussion on these spurious allegations against me. Let's go back to talking about Gaza.
Wow.
Can I say something
that
about
was
that?
Very powerful.
Because I think the abuse of the category of anti-Semitism, not only is it a genocide-enabling form of rhetoric, it's a crime, a cultural crime against an entire strand within Jewish thought and culture that want to universalize justice, liberation, and human rights. And to hear about friends that, you know, when working for years and know each other, to hear about that is not only an affront and an offense against Francesca, it's an offense against me as a Jewish person. To hear the complete distortion of a very important, you know, fight against anti-Semitic hate, and this is not to say that there isn't anti-Semitism and that we don't need to be vigilant about it, but it is a negation. It is a negation of our existence as Jewish people committed to Palestine liberation, committed to freedom, committed to decolonization in Palestine. And I, you know, every time that I hear Francesca being called that, I feel it's an offense against all of us.
Let's go back to your research at Forensic Architecture. You have been using this word a lot, ungrounding. Can you tell me more about it?
Yeah, I think let's go back to the 13th of October, to this most horrible evacuation order, this part of the displacement. The 13th of October, a short lull in the bombing, the worst kind of bombing, in the worst intensity that we've seen in living memory. And what is landing are words, papers. And I think that those papers, that bombing of leaflets, were actually sometimes more lethal than the bombing of bombs, right? And those leaflets pretend to warn people and to send them to safety, but actually sent them along routes that were bombed into, and the mechanism of displacement has been one of the means of destruction. And that's operate through words, leaflets and posts, etc. But something that was very particular about the 13th of October leaflet that landed in the north part of Gaza was that it said, cross Wadi Gaza.
Yeah.
It didn't say cross that neighborhood. It didn't say cross that street. It returned to a certain natural environment, as if everything that was built upon that environment is going to be swiped away. And indeed it was. And I think that in that moment of returning to the kind of the natural landscape, there was that act of ungrounding began. Because here is where the kind of Zionist imagination of the pure tabula rasa was actually returned. And you know that in the historical imagination of Zionism, in the pre-Jewish Zionists, the Protestant and the European proto-Zionists that toured that area, the Orientalists that did the maps of the 19th century and all the travel diaries, Wadi Gaza was the end of Palestine. Look at all the maps. Palestine exploration map from the last decades of the 19th century. Look at the Sykes-Picot border of the international Holy Land. It ends in Wadi Gaza. Expulsion beyond Wadi Gaza is the expulsion beyond the biblical conception of the Holy Land. And ungrounding is actually the removing and the removal of each and every designation, every trace of Palestinian life that was that. And you see soldiers posting post October 13 or post the 27th of October when they actually roll in and they say, we can see the sea again. Meaning we have returned that place to nature. And you have Palestinians posting or telling us from that area, we do not even recognize this place. It's moonscape. We do not know where our streets were because the entire topography has changed. That is ungrounding. Ungrounding is not only the removal of people, it's the removal and transformation of the ground and the return to that kind of natural landscape. And ungrounding is also requires us to understand that the genocide unfolds upon a specific territory, and it demands of us to learn about that territory and its history and its environment and its climate and the kind of soil that exists within it, because understanding this allow you to actually realize why the Palestinian ended up on the sand dunes in the south particularly. And what is the history of that environment in that way? So ungrounding is that kind of return to the basic element of the soil that that underpins the total destruction of Palestine. And also, you know that Israel has been using the existence of tunnels in different parts of Gaza as a justification to remove everything from the surface, as if the soil, the top of the soil, is a massive shield, right, that, you know, separates between the surface and the depth. And because they do not know exactly where the tunnels are and nobody can check with every bomb, it enabled them to illegally bomb everything and just say, well, there are tunnels underneath there. So, but the consequence is also that the kind of bombs that Israel sends into the subsoil of Gaza are bombs that, you know, puncture down 20, sometimes 30 meters, depending on the kind of soil that goes. They explode in the subsoil. An explosion is a chemical reaction that leaves toxic residues for years later. It disturbs the kind of the natural layering of the soil. So my point is that what we are seeing is not only the destruction of people, culture, the cities on the surface, but you see the destruction of the depth. And that is another way of understanding that category of ungrounding that I think is very relevant to understand the particular colonial genocide unfolding now in Gaza.
And these leaflets were dropped on the 13th of October on Gaza. And people thought that when they go south of Wadi Gaza, they will be safe. My family was bombed in south of Wadi Gaza.
Of course.
The 22nd of October. And they were killed. People were also even being bombed.
I'm sorry to hear that. It's heartbreaking for me to hear that.
But it's one story among thousands and thousands of stories in Gaza. But I mean, they even encourage people to go south, and then they bomb them on their way to the south, and then they bomb the south.
And we've documented dozens of attacks along the so-called safe routes.
Exactly. You have documented that, and we have documented that, and we have been talking about it in Palestine forever. 160 journalists were killed in Gaza while they're trying to cover this to the world. Mm. And yet, if you go to the mainstream media, Did it cover your research, the mainstream media?
Mm.
Did they talk anything about your research?
Not yet.
But it was very powerful, 800 pages, and yet we never heard of any grounding from the mainstream media. We never heard these stories from the mainstream media. Mm. Francesca, you a few days ago, you posted something and you said the Western media, or the mainstream media that is, can be held accountable for covering up for the genocide in Gaza. Tell me more about that.
Look, if we look at other genocides like in Rwanda or in former Yugoslavia, we have seen the media being complicit with the commission of crimes in different ways, but either amplifying the genocidal rhetoric, incitement to genocide, and this has been caught by the international tribunals, and media have been found responsible, complicit. This is not different in the sense that the media, while to an extent is understandable that, or it's not shocking that the Israeli media has been complicit in incitement to genocide and in covering up, even justifying, in creating the environment that hosted genocidal calls and genocidal discourse. And I include the justification of killing, of the entire destruction, erasure of Gaza, or the denial that starvation and famine was ongoing, the making fun of the rapes of, and even, justifying rape against Palestinians, detainees. So there are many dimensions. What is really incomprehensible, absurd and new to me is how Western media, the entire corporate media in the West, apart from few exceptions, and it's mainly independent journalists, has participated in this endeavor. And this is why, the other day I said the conduct of Western media should go under investigation. And I'm not the only one saying that, because my colleague, the Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Expression, Irene Khan, has published a report recently highlighting the crushing of freedom of expression and, among others, that has grown, including in Europe, progressively with the lasting of the genocide Gaza, but she has also pointed to the role of the media.
You have recently, Francesca, addressed the global community for the lack of empathy for the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. You said empathy is the glue that makes us stand united as a humanity. How have we got to this stage today that the Western elites simply don't recognize our humanity and the humanity of the Palestinians?
Yeah, I was wondering how they did this thing came to my mind. But you need to understand also the context. The Commission of Inquiry on Israel-Palestine and I were presenting these harrowing reports about what has been going on for half a year or 1 year in Gaza and the rest of the occupied Palestinian territory. Mm. And member states were not reacting to this. I was shocked to hear Western states not even commenting on Gaza, just questioning the mandate of the commission. Again, after 2 years, we're still talking about that. So, I couldn't hold it anymore. And this is the thing, the frustration. Palestinians are not seen. Palestinians are not, I'm sorry, but I need to say that Palestinians are not seen as humans.
Of course.
And
I can't say
and
that.
Like Dr. Abusita was saying yesterday, they are not grievable. So I agree with him, and I've said it myself also, reporting what another friend said to a Western audience. If you say 17,000 bunnies or dogs have been killed, there would be more empathy instead of 17,000 children. And the thing is that we see that on our phones, children butchered, children left limbless. And now you see more and more, those who are taken to hospitals are children. How the heck is this ongoing? I mean, it blows my mind. it continues to happen.
This takes me to another point, Eyal. Mm-hmm. A few days ago, Israeli hooligans in Amsterdam went rampage against people, and they called death for Arabs, death for children. They said there are no schools in Gaza because there are no children in Gaza. Now, when I was watching these videos, these are young men. Mm. Most likely, some of these or all of these served in the Israeli army or still serving in the Israeli army or maybe the reservists in the Israeli army. And they were in a Western country, a safe area, safe environment, calling death for children. Mm. We have seen a lot of videos that come from the Israeli army when they were in Gaza, and they said, and they were talking about killing the children of the people in Gaza because they will grow up to be terrorists in the future, so they have to kill them. What's shocking for me is that now they're not hiding that. Mm. They state that. They're clear about it. They want to kill the children in Gaza. They don't have a problem announcing it to the world. Mm. What does that tell you about these people? Since that you are Israeli, maybe you know some of these people. Maybe not.
The hooligans.
I haven't. I haven't
look
been,
like a hooligan. I'm joking.
I haven't been living in Palestine for the past 30 years, partly because I cannot live there. I feel I cannot breathe in a place of Jewish supremacy and apartheid. But I think that beyond the fact that clear genocidal statements are being expressed now, not only in Gaza itself, not only in kind of the Israeli social media, but in European capital, means that these are spaces where the people that express them perceive are okay to express those genocidal statements. They feel at home. They feel at home in the Netherlands that is drifting very fast to another form of white supremacy and Islamophobia.
Thank you very much, Francesca. Thank you very much, Eyal. It was a pleasure.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
According to a new report by the UN Human Rights Office, close to 70% of Palestinians martyred in Gaza are women and children. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, close to 70% of Palestinians killed in Gaza are children and women, indicating a systematic violation of the fundamental principles of international humanitarian law, according to a new report by the UN Human Rights Office. The detailed analysis on violations covers the 6 months from November 2023 to April 2024 and broadly examines the killing of civilians and breaches of international law that in many instances could amount to war crimes, the office said in a press statement. The reporter states, if committed as part of a widespread or systematic attack directed against a civilian population, further to a state or organizational policy, these violations may constitute crimes against humanity. And if committed with intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnical, racial or religious group, they may also constitute genocide. The report states that the International Court of Justice, in its series of orders on provisional measures, underscored the international obligations of Israel to prevent, protect against, and punish acts of genocide and associated prohibited conduct. UN Human Rights Chief Volker Türk stressed the imperative for the Zionist regime fully and immediately to comply with those obligations. He said, it is essential that there is due reckoning with respect to the allegations of serious violations of international law through credible and impartial judicial bodies and that, in the meantime, all relevant information and evidence are collected and preserved. The office has been verifying the personal details of those killed in Gaza by strikes, shelling, and other conduct of hostilities. And of those fatalities, it has so far found close to 70% to be children and women, indicating a systematic violation of the fundamental principles of international humanitarian law, including distinction and proportionality. The continuation of these attacks, killing evenly across the population, demonstrates an apparent indifference to the death of civilians and the impact of the means and methods of warfare selected, the reporter stated. The most represented of verified fatalities are children, the report found. And the three categories of age most represented were children aged from 5 to 9 years old, children from 10 to 14 years old, and babies and children from 0 to 4 years old. Of the verified fatalities, about 80% were killed in residential buildings or similar housing, out of which 44% were children and 26% were women. The high number of fatalities per attack was principally due to the Zionist regime use of weapons with wide area effects in densely populated areas, the office said. The report also raises concerns with respect to forcible transfer, attacks on hospitals in apparent systematic fashion, and journalists. It also points to the reported use of white phosphorus munitions. Turk said, our monitoring indicates that this unprecedented level of killing and injury of civilians is a direct consequence of the failure to comply with fundamental principles of international humanitarian law, namely the principles of distinction, proportionality, and precautions in attack. He added, tragically, these documented patterns of violations continue unabated over 1 year after the start of the war. He stressed, the trends and patterns of violations and of applicable international law as clarified by the International Court of Justice must inform the steps to be taken to end the current crisis. Following a UN Security Council resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire, the child killer regime of Israel has faced international condemnation amid its continued brutal offensive on the Gaza Strip. currently on trial before the International Court of Justice for Genocide Against Palestinians. The Zionist regime has been waging a devastating war on Gaza since October 7, 2023. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, at least 43,508 Palestinians have been martyred and at least 102,684 wounded in the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza starting on October 7, 2023. Moreover, at least 11,000 people are unaccounted for, presumed dead under the rubble of their homes throughout the Gaza Strip. Palestinian and international organizations say that the majority of those martyred and wounded are women and children. The Zionist regime war has resulted in an acute famine, mostly in northern Gaza, resulting in the martyrdom of many Palestinians, mostly children. The Zionist regime aggression has also resulted in the forceful displacement of nearly 2 million people from all over the Gaza Strip, with the vast majority of the displaced forced into the densely crowded southern city of Rafah near the border with Egypt, in what has become Palestine's largest mass exodus since 1948 Nakba. Later in the war, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians began moving from the south to central Gaza in a constant search for safety.
Hidden files. Tell me, what is it like being a journalist in Gaza?
Yes, first of all, thanks for having me. Actually, to be a journalist here in Palestine, and in particular in Gaza, it is not an easy task or interesting task. It's so risky indeed, because we are subject to brutal policy occupation. We don't have immunity. We are subject to Israeli occupation fire in any time. We don't take rest, indeed, since there is occupation in Palestine. Since nearly 2000, nearly 55 Palestinian journalists were murdered, and dozens got injured and maimed. Some of them lost their parts of their body. And here in Gaza, indeed, there is no immunity at all for Palestinians. We can't move freely inside occupied Palestine, for example. So none of the journalists are allowed to exit Gaza, maybe to cover incidents in the West Bank or in occupied Jerusalem. None of us is allowed to go there and cover anything there. So we are just stuck here in Gaza and covering the Israeli brutalities and the offensive against the people here in Gaza. And yet, also, they target us.
Well, tell me, what were your thoughts when you heard about Shireen's murder?
Actually, it was really a very sad morning. We woke up on extremely heartbreaking news. Really, we cried over her when we heard the news. Shireen is a great loss to Palestine. I mean, I just remember myself, since I was young, I heard her reports, and really, I liked her so much. Because she reported that the Israeli occupation tries to hide and distort. But for us as journalists, this is not shocking, but it served as a reminder to us that, hey, don't forget, you are going to be next target. So she is not the first journalist to be targeted. I'm sure she will not be the last.
Hello, and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Well, that clip is what Wafa al-Udan said about Shireen Abu Akhla, Palestinian-American Al Jazeera journalist who was slain by Israeli forces back in 2022. Wafa had joined us right here on Hidden Files in hopes of spreading the truth about the deliberate targeting of journalists by the Israeli regime in the pre-October 7th world, a world which had not awakened to the true nature of the decades-old occupation and its crimes against humanity. That interview was recorded over a year before people across the world were exposed to the murder of 150 journalists in some 100 days and the deafening silence of nearly all world leaders and human rights organizations. And since then, the targeting of journalists has only escalated, making it even harder for Palestinian journalists to cover the stories on the ground. But despite being terrorized, many of these journalists continue to put their lives on the line to tell the stories of people under Israeli fire. Journalists like Wafa al-Adani, who continued to cover the Israeli onslaught in Gaza following October the 7th, for the past few months, every time I read her messages, I was amazed by her strength, courage, and dedication. She says that she's still alive, that she'll remain steadfast, that no one has the right to tell her to leave her land, that she's willing to give more interviews and is unafraid of the danger, which is a lot to say, especially for a young journalist and a mother of four with her entire life ahead of her. But Wafa hasn't been replying to my messages since September the 26th. Which is understandable considering the circumstances. So we got in touch with another journalist in Gaza who will fill in for Wafa today and tell us what's been happening on the ground.
Akram al-Satari is a Palestinian journalist as well as an English and Arabic interpreter. He has worked for several international news organizations for many years, covering events in Gaza. He has remained diligent during the Zionist genocide in Gaza, talking to many TV stations and giving interviews to explain the reality on the ground. Like all journalists in the Gaza Strip these days, he risks his life every day simply by being a journalist and talking about the horrors being committed by the Zionist regime in occupied Palestine.
Akram, thanks so much for joining us. Tell us, what is life like in Gaza right now?
The day-to-day life in Gaza now is a continuous quest to avoid death. To avoid death by bombardment, to avoid death by hunger, and to avoid death by thirst. And even the ones who are injured in Gaza because of the ongoing bombardment, they are trying their best to avoid death by the infection and by the deteriorating health condition due to the insufficient pharmaceutical and medical supplies in Gaza. Life in Gaza features deprivation, features targeting, features destruction and displacement.
Well, what is it like to be a journalist now in Gaza while the Israeli regime is trying to silence the voice of the truth getting out?
It looks like the Israeli occupation is trying indeed to silence the journalists. And therefore, some of the people who are reporting, which means they were in action while they're targeted, which also means they were entitled to the protection granted to them according to the Geneva Convention. However, they were still targeted. The overall journalistic environment is extremely volatile and unsafe. Every time I speak about that, I say the situation is inconceivable. Inconceivable in the sense of the pace of the targeting, the nature of the targeting, and also the outcome of the targeting. We have seen journalists with their wrists, with their visibility vests also on them, while they are still being targeted. No precautions taken by the occupation to protect or at least to identify the journalists and kill them. The head of the press house in Palestine was killed. Some other prominent journalists were also killed. So overall situation, whether the occupation plans it or not, people are killed, and they are killed because of the ongoing bombardment and indiscriminate fire. This is the one fact about the situation. No protection for the journalists, no protection for the public, no protection for what they call them, the civil objects according to the international law, and the situation continues to deteriorate.
Well, how risky is it for you to go out and cover a story?
Whenever I'm going to a location for just live broadcast, it's extremely risky. Yesterday, I was doing live reporting from Abu Yusuf al-Najjar Hospital in Rafah East area. There was a very heavy bombardment targeting a house not far away from the hospital. Overall, we are part of the community. We see the dangers and we avoid death. Sometimes it's near us. We understand that we might get any time, and we understand that sometimes we are targeted not because of our journalists, but because we are part of a bigger community that is being under attack.
Could you imagine that you would still be going through this for so long?
No, it's inconceivable, but the issue is that the occupation continued for the last few decades, the 75 years or so, to deny the right of Palestinians to live, and also to target the Palestinians everywhere. So it's not just about the targeting in Gaza. It's more about the targeting in Gaza, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Yemen, in Libya. So the occupation has always been denying the fact that Palestinians are entitled to live in dignity and in freedom. So I was not surprised by the killing that was taking place, but to be honest, I was more surprised by the scale of the destruction that has been caused and the nature, as I told you, of the bombardment and of the targeting. We have an extremely large number of children who were killed, extremely large number of women who were killed, inconceivable number of houses that were destroyed. The infrastructure is being also destroyed, which is indicative of the fact that the occupation is planning to leave Gaza uninhabitable. As if Gaza was not uninhabitable in the past. UN was saying that Gaza was supposed to be uninhabitable by 2020. Now in 2024, the occupation is doing all it can for the sake of rendering Gaza uninhabitable and displacing the people of Gaza, removing them to Sinai to make sure that they can bring about the prophecies of the end of days and keep Judea and Samaria for themselves.
Well, despite all the suffering that the Palestinians in Gaza have shown such strong faith and perseverance, I mean, what do you attribute that to?
Well, I think faith plays a major role in people coping with difficult situations. I have spoken to many of the Gazans also who were losing their deals and homes and who were supposed to be helpless and in despair. However, they understand that everything they endure is written, and they understand that they have no other choice. We have around 3-4 generations, like I told you, who lived in misery, blockade, and in under occupation. However, they understand that they have no other option but to stay perseverant and to stay on this land. They understand that their existence is their resistance and that their patience is one of their arms to show fortitude and to still exist on this land. And that's why even with the major bombardment and targeting in all different parts of the Gaza Strip, we don't have one Gazan that went toward the border or tried to storm the border. Gazans know that they have no other place but Palestine, and in collective memory of Gaza, they understand leaving Gaza means more misery and more suffering. So they understand that they will be rewarded for the patience and perseverance they have, and they understand they have no other homeland they can go to.
Akram Al-Satari, thank you so much for being with us right here on Hidden Files. But the faith and sacrifice of these Palestinian journalists is not only serving their own people. The fact remains that despite their tireless coverage, the genocide in Palestine goes on. In fact, the people benefiting most from the coverage are viewers like you, people across the world who get to see the naked truth about Western hegemony thanks to these journalists. Because hadn't we all been told that journalists should be safe to cover the news and that anyone targeting journalists is a dictator deserving a crackdown by the international community? And that people don't need to fight for power, as their fights are guaranteed by the international organizations. Now, thanks to Palestinian journalists today, over a year into this all-out genocide, we know that none of that is true. We now know that homes, schools, hospitals, and media offices can be legitimate targets for Western powers, that any resolution for peace can be vetoed by the same entities, and that the only power the oppressed can rely on is that of their own words and weapons. Even the simple act of covering Israeli crimes can be criminalized by the occupation. Just recently, the IOF has labeled six Al Jazeera journalists as terrorists to justify their impending murder. Journalists like Wafa, Akram and Shobat take their lives in their hands every day to depict the reality, not the tainted version by mainstream media, and they end up paying the heaviest price.
Like the Israeli airplane to be in your sky?
Yeah.
So why you drew them?
Because
I can't like hear this. You. What?
Like this here.
The rubble. What's left of Wafat al-Adain, his home. The home that was already destroyed once before by the Israeli occupation and rebuilt by Wafa and her husband, Bassem. The home that was once filled with the laughter of her four children, but on September the 30th, in the middle of the night, the Israeli regime targeted Wafa's house. And then it was not only the house that was reduced to a pile of rubble. Wafa, her husband, her infant baby boy, and her only daughter were asleep in the same room. Wafa had been blown out of the house. Her baby girl's leg was blown off and slowly succumbed to her burns and died in the hospital. This is after the Israeli regime targeted them with drones in their homes. Only the older two sons, Bassem and Malik, survived the Israeli attack because they were sleeping on the other side of the house. And now they must be burdened with the trauma beyond what any child or adult should ever have to bear. In a year, over 170 journalists have been confirmed dead in Palestine, murdered by the Israeli regime. There has been no other war since records have been kept where this many journalists have been killed in such a short period of time. There is no protection for these journalists, and there will not be any, as every major rights organization is either infiltrated and are controlled by the Zionist regime, are powerless in the face of these crimes. The only support for people like Wafa is that the stories they sacrifice so much for are not lost in social media algorithms and mainstream media filters and distortions so that it can inform people and inspire change, so that these atrocities are not repeated ever again. And that support is something you can do by watching and sharing their content. Look at this Palestinian journalist. Wafa had her whole life ahead of her with her lovely family and a promising future. By the way, she was 1 month away from her 40th birthday. She risked everything to spread the truth, knowing that she had so much to lose. What about you? What is your excuse? Thank you so much for being with us right here on Hidden Files.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In today's fast-paced news cycle, it's common for breaking news to fade quickly from attention. Yet, the Zionist regime's genocidal campaign in Gaza, which has already claimed more than 44,000 Palestinian lives, has broken this trend, remaining persistently in the public eye. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Kehan International wrote, "The sanguinary scenes of slaughter in Gaza over the past 400 days, without a day's respite, have shocked the world, but failed to move it into action to force the U.S. regime to end supply of weapons to the murderers in Tel Aviv, who have so far killed at least 44,000 people, 70% of whom are women and children. Once flourishing towns and cities, as well as refugee camps, the last shelter of the displaced, reduced to rubble, one of the worst catastrophes in history, is about to unfold. Yet, the self-styled advocates of human rights, along with countries that have the means to confront the genocidal Zionist entity, content themselves with mere verbal condemnation that will not stop." What is more shocking, however, is the silence of rich and seemingly powerful Muslim states sharing borders with occupied Palestine or in its vicinity and equipped with large armies and modern weapons capable of ending the genocide, if not the end of 74 years of occupation. The heads of these states have not even taken a leaf out of the Golden Book of the Axis of Resistance, which is bravely battling Usurper Israel by targeting its military